The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. Like I said last week, college football is back, but this week it was back in full swing much more than last week because Alabama played, Auburn played, UAB played, all the teams around the country did end up playing, had some good games, had some pretty bad games here and there, depending on who you're a fan of. So we'll get into that later in this show, but we're going to start out like always with some AAA here. So hop right into the first story. Still staying with college football, of course. The ACC voted last Friday to add Stanford, California, and SMU starting the 2024-2025 season. In a straw poll more than 3 weeks ago, which we covered, four ACC schools were against adding these teams: Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and NC State. However, according to ESPN's Adrian Adelson, NC State flipped their vote, which allowed those teams to be admitted. Nathan, it's the Atlantic Coast Conference, and we have teams on the opposite coast, like Stanford and California, now joining this conference. What are your thoughts on this? And do you think the ACC is going to have to change their name now?
This is just going to start the downfall of the ACC. As soon as this was allowed to happen, as soon as NC State put their vote to allow these three new schools into the conference, it's already making them look bad. It's all about revenue nowadays for schools. You talk about Clemson, you talk about Florida State in North Carolina, three of the highest graduating schools in the ACC. They see three more mouths to feed, and everyone's getting a fair share of the money. And obviously, not everyone is going to bring in the same amount of money as these top schools. So they want to get out. And honestly, I think it's probably going to come to the point where they're going to end up buying their way out, however much money it's going to be, because it is going to affect them so much. Adding two schools from the opposite side of the United States is absolutely crazy. We already covered how it would affect the Big Ten when USC and UCLA was added and how much traveling is involved. But now it is a coast-to-coast conference, and the amount of travel impact it's going to have on these student athletes is going to be insane. I mean, you're talking about days on end just traveling, and that's going to take a lot out of their school time, as much as not having as many days to practice and prepare for games. But I didn't like the move. I already thought the ACC was in a bad spot, but the teams they already had trouble bringing in a lot of money, other than Clemson, Florida State, and North Carolina. But now you look at it and you just have so many mouths to feed. I get that you're trying to do add more teams in to build more revenue, but it's just not going to work out like that.
Yeah, this is a very questionable move. When we discussed it earlier, we were kind of glad that they didn't admit these teams because it made zero sense. Like I said, when we started, it's the Atlantic Coast Conference. It's not the entire country. I mean, we're going to the Pacific Coast and we're grabbing teams like Stanford and California. I just don't understand it. SMU makes a bit of sense, not much.
No, not really.
I mean, still not on the coast over there. I don't understand this. Cal, Stanford, SMU are not hugely good at football. Stanford's probably the best of the three. Cal's been awful for years. SMU hasn't been good since they had that fiasco back in the 90s. What was it called? The death kiss or something to their team?
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, so they have been good. Stanford hasn't been good since Andrew Luck was there. So, I mean, that's been a while. I don't understand this move. I know you look at what they announced is Stanford and Cal will be getting 30% of the whole ACC share for the next 7 years. Then it'll jump to 70 in year eight and then 75% in year nine and then full financial shares in the 10th year. And then SMU's not going to have, I don't think they're going to get any money to start out with. So, I mean, I guess that's okay, but I still don't understand the move. This is, like you said, Nathan, going to be the end of the ACC. This will be the start of the downfall because teams like Clemson and Florida State, North Carolina are going to want to be in a conference with these terrible football teams like Cal and Stanford Virginia and then Virginia Tech, who aren't good at football themselves. This conference is a basketball conference, and it's going to be that way until somebody other than Clemson and Florida State can prove that they're actually good at football on a consistent basis. And NC State, what an absolute bozo move for them to decide, you know what? We're going to be a little bit of sissies here. We're going to flip our vote because we want to allow these teams in the conference. And I told you before we started recording the show, Nathan, I was kind of surprised that Miami wasn't against this, considering how big a market Miami is and how good they've been at football in previous years. I know they haven't been good recently, but I mean, back in the early 2000s, they were a powerhouse like Alabama was. So this is a big question mark for me. Don't understand the move. Hopefully it works out for the ACC. I don't think it does. You'll probably see Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina be on the move here within the next year or so to get out of that deal.
I'll give it three.
Yeah, they'll pony up the money. They have the boosters and the donors and all that to do so. So it'll happen at some point. And that will really be the end of the ACC. It'll kind of be like a Pac-12 scenario where Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina will leave and the conference will just
fall apart.
Scatter. It'll be like, okay, here goes Virginia Tech to SEC. Here goes this team to the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and all that. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out in the future. All right, moving on to the next story, away from college football, moving to NFL. TJ Hockenson and the Minnesota Vikings agreed to a four-year contract extension worth up to $68.5 million, the average annual value of $17.125 million, and the $42.5 million in guaranteed money are the highest ever for a tight end in NFL history. Nathan Hockenson hasn't had a 1,000-yard season in his entire career, and the Minnesota Vikings are going to have to pay Justin Jefferson in the coming years. Kirk Cousins is on a contract, pretty big contract. The team as a whole is pretty lackluster, especially on the defensive side of the football, made a bunch of cuts this offseason. So I don't understand the move giving TJ Hockenson this big contract extension. I think tight end, kind of like running back, is a very replaceable position nowadays, unless you're Travis Kelce, of course, because he's not replaceable at all. But to give a tight end this type of money who hasn't had a 1,000-yard season and who isn't as dominant as a guy like Travis Kelce is wild to me. What do you think?
Yeah, obviously, I thought this was a lot of money, especially, you know, considering he's now one of the highest paid tight ends in the league. I don't think his stats really show that over the past few seasons, even though he has been a very reliable and good tight end at times. I don't think he should have gotten this kind of money, but it really comes down to looking at the tight end position and where it's going, given contact, its extensions and stuff like that. Talk about Travis Kelce. Obviously, he's going to get his money. Travis Kelce is by far the greatest tight end. I think he's probably the greatest tight end we've ever seen play the game of football. And to consider the way that the tight end position has become more of a skill position, it's no longer focused on really running. I mean, you'll, of course, have blocking tight ends, but a lot of the tight ends nowadays, they're looked at to make plays in the open field. They're looking at a receiver out there. So as long as the position keeps going in that direction, these tight ends are going to be looking to be paid more money. As far as the Vikings go, having to pay TJ Hockenson this much money, considering what you have coming up, especially Justin Jefferson, and then your whole defense, man, the Vikings defense is going to hold them back. It just keeps falling apart and getting worse and worse every year, especially in this offseason, the way they performed. I really thought they were going to try to beef up the defense and bring some new guys in. They didn't really focus on that at all, and that was a big surprise for me. And then you look at the quarterback position with Kirk Cousins. How much longer can you deal with Kirk Cousins? Can he lead you to where you want to go, or are you going to have to go get a new quarterback? And that will cost money as well. So I don't agree with this move by the Vikings, but congrats to TJ Hockenson for getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, congrats, like you said, I think congrats for Hockenson for actually getting this contract extension, considering he's never had a 1,000-yard season. I know he was with the Lions when they had all their quarterback issues with Matt Stafford, you know, towards the end of his career there. And then Jared Goff had that really off year, his first season, even though he's back on track now. But Hockenson, like I said, I don't think he deserves his contract extension. We're looking at stats and the way this position's going. I definitely think they could have waited, like got a tight end in the draft that does just as what TJ Hockenson does. I mean, look, Brock Bowers is coming into this league. We saw somebody like Amari Nyeblack, who we're going to talk about later, on Alabama, who looks to be the future of the tight end position, how versatile he is in that game. He's even a good run blocker. So I don't think, like I said, tight end should be getting this type of money. But when these guys work the way they do, kind of like the running backs, they deserve to get paid. And TJ Hockenson, there's no doubt in my mind he's worked his tail off to get to this point in his career. So that's off to him for getting paid. But the Vikings, they're going to be in a difficult situation because they're going to have to pay Justin Jefferson the biggest contract for wide receiver in NFL history. And if they don't do that, he's not going to sign with them. And that's just going to be a whole other situation with them. But Jefferson will be the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history, regardless of what happens. All right, moving on to the last story. It's a sad one. Music icon Jimmy Buffett passed away this past Friday at the age of 76 after a 4-year battle with Merkel cell skin cancer. It just felt like, earlier this summer, Ethan, we were watching that YouTube video about that guy visiting all the Margaritavilles around the United States. And now Jimmy Buffett has passed away, and the impact he's had on just not our lives, but generations of people. I mean, the song Margaritaville came out in 1977, and we're still listening to it today, and we're still enjoying it. So he's had a major impact on everybody's lives, and it's sad to see him go.
Yeah, this one definitely hurt a lot. I remember when it came out, when the news came out, it was in the middle of the night. I was about to go to bed. I hear this, and I was absolutely heartbroken. You mentioned the YouTube video I watched. There are thousands of people who enjoy Margaritaville stuff. The icon that Jimmy Buffett was and the impact on the community, on the country and the world was absolutely incredible. Just the impact he made, especially in Key West. I think that's probably where he made the biggest impact at really changing the culture of the islands down there. And then going all over the country, you talk about setting up his restaurant chain and just so many different things that he was involved with. But he definitely will be very, very missed. I know I love his music. It's kind of hard not to like his music. It's sad to see him go.
Yeah. I mean, I was heartbroken. This guy has had an impact on so many people's lives. Like I said, hopefully he's having a cheeseburger in paradise now.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's move into some college football here, Nathan. I think that's what we've all been looking forward to for like the past, 3 months, it feels like.
You can go longer than that, honestly.
Yeah. And let's talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide in their game. I think going into the season with no Pete Golding and Bill O'Brien, every Alabama fan was excited for the first time in, I think, a couple of years, because the way that team was playing and the way we saw this weekend, it would look like two completely different Alabama football teams from last year into this year. That's wild for me, considering I think last year's Alabama team was much more talented than this year's. But they host Middle Tennessee State at home and absolutely clobber them 56-7. Nathan, you went to the game. You got to see Jalen Milroe get the nod as starting quarterback. Nick Saban said after the game that even though he did perform well, it's a week-to-week thing with the quarterback position and pretty much every position on the team on who's going to start week in and week out. And you got to prove yourself week in and week out. And I think that's a great thing to have these players think about, is you're always competing. You're never comfortable. You're never settling. You're never going into practice saying, I can just do this and this and lollygag around, even though I don't think Alabama players do that, regardless of their position being guaranteed or not. We got to see Milroe, 5 touchdowns in the season opener, 3 passing and 2 rushing. I believe the only other player to do that was Cam Newton back with Auburn, and that was when he won the Heisman that year and they won the national championship with the three passing touchdowns and 2 rushing touchdowns. So I'm not saying Jalen Milroe is going to be Cam Newton, but it's good to see Milroe come out in his second career start and have this type of game, even if it is against Middle Tennessee State. You had Buckner come in being the second quarterback off the bench. He had a rushing touchdown of his own. And the last quarterback off the bench was Ty Simpson. And he also had a rushing touchdown. So all 3 quarterbacks that came into the game had a rushing touchdown. Milroe with 2, like I said. Then you had the running backs. I don't think the play was up to par of what we expected, considering the hype the Alabama offensive line was getting, even though I think they were much better than years past. They were really getting up the field, getting into blocks. Nathan, you're the offensive lineman here, so hopefully you go for that. But they were really eating blocks. So Tyler Booker, there was a couple of times where he was finishing people 15 yards up the field on a play. The receivers looked really well. Isaiah Bond looked like the vertical threat we all thought he could be going into the season with that 47-yard touchdown reception. Jermaine Burton had 48-yard reception of his own. And then, like I mentioned in the T.J. Hockenson discussion, Amari Nyblak, the tight end for Alabama, had a touchdown reception of his own on a beautiful pass from Milroe. The defense, which is what I was most impressed about, because in years past, that Alabama defense has looked like they were just going through the motions almost. And I don't want to say it's all on Pete Golding, but the way this team played, it feels like it should be Pete Golding's fault, because they feel like they play with a renewed sense of energy, and they just look like they wanted it out there. Even though they're playing against Middle Tennessee State, 3 sacks, 7 TFLs, interception. I believe last year the team only got 7 interceptions, so getting that turnover was big. That interception being by Jalen Key, and they had a fumble recovery by Kendrick Blackshear, where he basically just ripped the football out of the receiver's hands and took it down the field. Some standout guys you saw was freshman Caleb Downs at safety, 6 solo tackles and a TFL. And I think the man of the game, regardless of the side of the football, was linebacker Deontay Lawson, a 7 tackles for them solo, a sack and 2 TFLs. It felt like wherever the football was on the field, Deontay Lawson was there. He was all over the place. I was getting a lot of flashbacks to previous Allie McGrath linebackers like Dont'a Hightower, CJ Mosley, Reuben Foster. I mean, this dude has had a nose for the football, and it was exciting to see a linebacker back to be this way in Nick Saban defense, because in the past couple of years, it hasn't been great. Henry Toto was not what we expected, but Deontay Lawson, I think, could be the guy here and out for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Nathan, what did you see in this game that made you excited for Alabama football going into next week against Texas?
Yeah, being at this game, the atmosphere was definitely there. There was a lot of excitement, like you talked about, Alex. Having the change at coordinator position was huge. It was something that I wanted for a long time. I know we were on that same page. And after last year, just left a bad taste in your mouth, the way we handled some of the games, the way we handled the talent on the team. Because let's be honest, the talent on last year's Alabama team was off the charts, and they weren't able to even reach the SEC championship. So obviously I think it comes down to kind of mostly on the coordinators, setting up the right culture on both sides of the ball. But you know, starting with the offense, we're replacing a Heisman winner and Bryce Young, first round draft pick. I mean, first off the board. So it's definitely going to be difficult to back up what he's been able to do. But Joe Milrow being named the starter, he comes in, and I was pretty stunned by the way he handled himself. I know they started off giving him some comfortable throws, and over time they kind of opened up the playbook a little bit more. You saw read options in there. We haven't seen that since Jalen Hurts, really. that took me off guard, but I enjoyed that thoroughly. But I was very, very impressed with how much Joe Milrow was able to improve this offseason, especially with throwing the ball. You talk about being 13 of 18, 194 yards and 3 touchdowns through the air. That's a pretty solid game. Not to mention, he's also the team's leading rusher, and he had two rushing touchdowns, especially the one where it was a terrible snap and he just had to do it himself. So the athleticism was always there, and he has improved so much. I am very excited to see what he's going to be able to do in the atmosphere that is next weekend when Alabama takes on Texas at home. That's going to be a different game for him, different environment. I don't know how he's going to handle it, but I definitely think that they're in a much better situation to handle it now than they might have been a year ago. When you get the other two quarterbacks, I was, I really thought Tyson was going to come out and be the second quarterback out there.
Yeah.
But with Tyler Buckner coming out there, he kind of looked a little skittish at first, but he kind of settled in. And then he ran a read option too, which I was kind of surprised because I didn't think Tyler Buckner was like that. I expected him to stay in the pocket and throw the ball. But he picked up his rushing touchdown. There are a few key throws that he missed on that I think that he's working a little bit more, but he is a very serviceable quarterback as himself. And then Ty Simpson, he got limited snaps, but what he did with the time he was on the field, I thought was pretty good, especially having a quarterback sneak. How many times did we go under center and have a quarterback sneak or halfback lead dive on a 3rd and 1 or 3rd and inches? And last year we would have thrown the ball. And that's just something that was absolutely amazing for me to see. That's something that I've always wanted to do. But you know, we can focus on running the ball now. And I think it starts with the offensive line and the ultimate game plan that Tommy Rees has had coming into this Middle Tennessee State game was the fact that all offseason, we had talked about how much we were going to run the ball, and that's going to be our identity. And when your opponent knows that, it's kind of hard to really find certain plays to disguise that, especially when they just stack the box, because that's all Middle Tennessee did. I was impressed with the offensive line. They didn't miss a few key blocks. There was a few things that I saw that we needed to work on, but for the most part, they handled their own, especially when it came down to protecting the quarterback in the pocket, not giving up a lot of sacks. There was one or two in there that really, it was more of Jalen Milrow, his clock has to go off and get the ball out of there or run out of the pocket. But for the most part, the offensive line did pretty well. And let's be honest, it's probably one of the biggest in the country. And I'm excited to see what they can do next week against some better competition.
Yeah,
that Texas offense. The run blocking, the running the ball has to be a little bit better. Jace McClellan having 10 carries or 40 yards and a touchdown. I expected a little bit more, but then again, when they're expecting it, it's kind of hard to do it. And then another thing, really impressed with the wide receiver room, especially Isaiah Bond. I wanted someone to kind of step up into that wide receiver one role because everyone last year decided that they didn't want to even come close to sniffing the ball. and for the most part, Isaiah Bond said, "I'm your guy." And he stepped up into that role. Looks like the go-to receiver for Milroe, 5 receptions, 76 yards and a touchdown on the deep bomb too. It was like 47 yards. And, yeah. and then Jermaine Burton got involved too, which was something. He struggled with drops last year. I didn't see very many in this game. 3 receptions, 62 yards and touchdown. He had a long of 48. So he was in there. And then you cut down to the tight end position with Amari Nyblack, 2 receptions, 49 yards and a touchdown. He's been a great run blocker too. He is very versatile, but he looked like another receiver out there. And I like how we had the TJ Hawkinson story up there because that's just the way the tight end position is going. The versatility of the tight end that you have to have is insane nowadays. They have to be fast. They have to be pretty much a receiver that can unbelievably block. And Amari Nyblack is just that ultimate freak of nature that I think is going to kind of be similar to Joel Billingsley without the crazy. I saw that on Twitter the other day. I thought that was an awesome comparison. But overall, really impressed with the offensive side of things. But then you flip over to the defense side of things. And I was admittedly a little worried because of how much we've struggled in the past. I was really excited to see what Kevin Steele was going to bring into this game, what kind of defense sets he was going to run. And when he opened the gate and we had three down linemen and then upright end, I was a little surprised by what he set up. But over time, his schemes that he ran were absolutely insane. I liked how we focused on man coverage on defenses instead of playing zone. It really challenged the cornerbacks and safeties to really play disciplined football. And I think they all did that. I was impressed with the way Terrion Arnold played. Coy McKintry, of course, had himself a game. And then we talk about the linebacker position. That has not been the same for the past 4 years now. Deontay Lawson, he's been on the roster. We had him last year. But he comes in, he just looks like the whole patrol the middle of the field. Really comparable to a guy in Sam Mills. I mean, that's what he looked like out there. It seemed like he was on every tackle. I mean, he was able to get in the backfield. The pursuit he had whenever Middle Tennessee tried to run the bubble screen, because that's all they ran all game, felt like, was just on the bubble screen again, again, again. The fact that he was able to make so many open field tackles and make it look so easy was crazy. And then you look at the safety position with Caleb Downs, and he is such a great up and comer. I like the way he was pretty much a ball hawk back there, and being able to come down and run support for our safeties, that was a big question mark for me. But Caleb Downs answered that, and he was not scared to hit people. He came down and laid the wood several times. I saw that. And then another guy in Kendrick Blackshear, he's another guy where he was just given the opportunity and he took advantage of it, especially him just ripping the ball at that wide receiver's hands was something else. But I'm not going to spend long talking about this whole team because there's talent across the board and it seems like the culture is a lot better. And going into next week, it's going to be very, very exciting to see what's in store. But I was generally just really, really happy with the performance.
Yeah, there was a lot of positives with this Alabama team in this game, but there was a couple of negatives I saw with offensive line. The center position, Seth McLaughlin.
Oh, yeah.
Like the entire game, the snaps were either below Milrow's knees or he's having to reach for them. And you kind of mentioned, Nathan, when that bad snap where it didn't end up leading to a touchdown. But when you play somebody like Texas and you have that bad of a snap, I don't think Jalen Milroe is going to get that far to the end zone. Texas has too many athletes for him to do that. So I think Seth McLaughlin has to get much better at snapping the football because Jalen Milroe should not be having to reach down every time to get the football. It takes crucial seconds away from his ability to read the defense and make a decision with the football. And that become dire when they play great defenses like Texas upcoming week, LSU when they play them, and then Georgia if they get to that point in the SEC championship. So got to get that under control. And then the running game, I don't think there's a dominant running back this year. There's not a...
It's a running back by committee, pretty much.
There's not a Najee Harris. There's not a Troy Richardson. There's not an Eddie Lacy. There's not a Derrick Henry. And that's what worries me with the running game is Chase McClellan's not going to be that every down running back. Roy Williams isn't, Justice Haynes isn't. I think Justice Haynes of three has the potential to be that guy where we can put him on the field for three downs and then, you know, he can do his thing. So that worries me a little bit, is there wasn't that dominant running back this game, as we expected to see going into it, with all the talk around how good the offensive line was and how good the running back room was. So hopefully with the role under control and him getting his first second career start under his belt, they can go focus on this running game and get the running back some more touches to get that under control and get some yards that way, because they're going to need it, because these defenses are going to start loading the box, put a spy on Milroe, and they're going to have to rely on guys like McClellan and Roy Williams to get that ball off the field. All right, let's move on to the Auburn Tigers here. They hosted UMass. The first quarter of that game was pretty wild to me, because Auburn's defense just let UMass march down the field on their first drive. That was a little worrisome, but then the second drive, I feel like Auburn's defense kind of settled in and figured UMass out. The final score of that game ended up being 59-14, and Auburn won. You look at the quarterbacks there. Auburn, like Alabama, ended up playing three quarterbacks. Peyton Thorne was a starter. One touchdown, no interception, so no issue there. But then in the red zone, that's his nickname now, Red Zone Robbie Ashford. It felt like as soon as I got within the 20-yard line, here comes Robbie Ashford, here comes his packages. And he came in the game and he had three rushing touchdowns on 9 carries, 51 yards. So I think Hugh Freeze is managing that quarterback position pretty well, with the fact that you're letting kind of Peyton Thorne lead the drive down the field. And when they get in the red zone, Robbie Ashford, let's run these read options, these QB draws and all that. And then you also had Holden Gariner come in towards the end of the game. Went to a 259 yards. So got to see three quarterbacks there. But you look at Auburn, they're going to play two quarterbacks, I'm pretty sure, every game. They're going to have the Robbie Ashford packages every game. So I think that's exciting for Auburn fans, is you're going to get to see Peyton Thorne, but you're also going to get to see the explosive running ability of Robbie Ashford in the backfield. But then you look at the running back room. Pretty impressive. Jarquez Hunter didn't play. But you had some other guys step up. Sean Jackson had 64 yards and a touchdown. Freshman Jeremiah Cobb, 57 yards and a touchdown. Damari Alston, 43 yards and a touchdown. Justin Jones, 33 yards. And then Brian Battea had 31 yards. But the big thing for Auburn these past couple of years has been that receiving room. It has been horrid. If Gray was here, he'd be talking about how poor it's been. But it looked a million times better this game. Jay Fair looked like the best receiver on Auburn. He had 5 receptions, 56 yards and a touchdown. Shane Hooks had 2 receptions for 41 yards. There was no Nick Martiner this game. He was out with an injury, so he'll probably be back next week. But the receiving room looked much better. The quarterback play looked much better and balanced with Thorne and Robbie Ashford. The defense with Ron Roberts coaching that, like I said, had a rough start. But when they got under control, they were flying around the field, 4 sacks and TFLs. Jalen Simpson had a pick 6 and a fumble recovery, so he was all over the place. But for me, the one guy that stuck out to me in this whole entire game was safety Donovan Kaufman. He was kind of like Caleb Downs, was kind of like a ball hawk the entire game. Wherever the ball was, it felt like Donovan Kaufman was just right there. He had a sack and 2 TFLs. I'm excited for this Auburn team. I don't think they're going to win the SEC or anything, but they're in a much better place than they were 2 or 3 years ago. I'm excited for the future with Hugh Freeze there, and especially with the Iron Bowls being much more competitive. I love a competitive Iron Bowl as much as the next guy, even though it's great when you don't have to worry about Auburn coming in to Brian Denny and putting a whooping on Alabama or anything like that. But I love a competitive Iron Bowl, and I think that's what we're going to get this year if Auburn continues to play like this.
Yeah, I'll start off with the quarterback position. Coming into this offseason, whenever Peyton Thorne decided he wanted to transfer from Michigan State to Auburn, I was a little questionable about the whole transfer scenario. I really thought that Robbie Ashford was going to come out and be QB1, but obviously Hugh Freeze has a lot more trust in Peyton Thorne and his ability to throw the ball, which it was there on Saturday. It wasn't very explosive or dominant, but he did get the job done for the most part. And then Hugh Freeze with his packages that he brought in with the red zone and the goal line scenarios with Robbie Ashford running read options or just running bootleg passes, stuff like that. I thought that was pretty interesting. But I think against harder opponents, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to run that kind of formation. But for the most part, I saw not really many problems with the Auburn's quarterback room. It's really the running backs just really just got the job done. I mean, Demarion Alston was really, really good to me. Jeremiah Cobb was all over the place. He was a very dominant runner. I mean, you can go across the board. Every single runner that Auburn had ran the ball with authority, and that's something that's always been there. But like you said, Alex, the whole problem over the past few years have been the wide receiver position, and Jay Thayer, he comes in, five receptions, 56 yards and a touchdown. Malcolm Johnson Jr. out there too, two receptions for 59 yards. They both looked very, very good. They looked comfortable in the offense, and they were able to go and make plays. I know it's against UMass, but still, it is a very, very good start. Speaking of that, last year, you didn't really have a go-to guy. Looking at your defense was all over the place. I was really, really impressed with the way Jalen Simpson played. He was all over the place, being able to make plays, especially the pick six. That was huge in the game. And then you talk about Donovan Kaufman. Just like Caleb Downs, he is in a very similar position, but being at that safety position and being able to come down and run support, or being able to make it track across the field and break up passes and stuff like that, is going to be huge for this Auburn team. I saw a lot of great things all across the board, and I think especially with the quarterback scenario, the way that Hugh Freeze has handled it, it instills a lot of confidence in the team, and it's not going to create discrepancy in that quarterback room going forward. I forget who Auburn plays next, but I know they have a challenge going on the road to Cal coming here soon.
That's next.
That is next. Okay, so that's going to be a challenge for them. Cal, they look good in their opening game, and it's going to be a different environment. It's SEC versus Pac-12. I know Cal is not a very historically great team, but that's going to be a sneaky game. It's going to be very, very exciting to see how Hugh Freeze prepares the team to go out there to play a team like Cal.
Yeah, I think for Auburn fans, they have to be excited because this game was something to build off of. With Brian Harsin, there wasn't much of that. So I think Auburn fans had to be excited going into next week and then going in to the rest of the season into the future with Hugh Freeze. I think he's got this team in the right direction, kind of like Nick Saban turned it around for Alabama this season. So good things happening in Alabama football right now. All right, moving on to the last Alabama team we're going to talk about today, the UAB Blazers. They took on NC A&T, ended up winning the game 35-6. I was thoroughly surprised and happy with how UAB played. Jacob Zeno, the quarterback, was a little worried about him going into that game. When he played last year, didn't look amazing, but he set the record for completions by UAB quarterback. Three touchdowns, no interceptions. The wide receiver room looked really good. Fred Ferrier the second, TJ Jones, Palmer all looked great. The running back duo of Jermaine Brown Jr., Skull Brown, and Isaiah Jacobs wasn't as dominant as we're used to with guys like Dwayne McBride and Spencer Brown. It wasn't like that. Brown had 47 yards, and then Jacobs had 42 yards on the ground. So it wasn't as dominant. But when you have Jacob Zeno playing the way he did in the defense, holding Eli Brickhandler to, I believe, seven passing yards in the first half. I mean, you don't have to depend much on the running game. But the UAB defense, once again, thoroughly impressed with that because defensive coordinator was a high school defensive coordinator last year alongside Trent Dilfer. So he doesn't have that much experience coaching at the college football level. So for him to come into this game and be as dominant coaching the defensive side of the football as he was, I was happy about that. A linebacker, Jackson Braddon, dude was a stud. Eight solo tackles, two sacks, two TFLs. I think if Deontay Lawson wasn't in the state of Alabama, Braddon might be the best linebacker in this state right now. But unfortunately, Deontay Lawson does exist here, so I can't say that. But kind of like with Auburn, UAB, new head coach, get a big win. I know it's not against a great opponent, but a lot of stuff to build off of. I'm excited for this team. I think the ceiling is so high for them. I know they weren't projected to get a lot of wins, but I would not be surprised if they continue this, they win the American Conference, because with the offense coordinator, with Alex Mortensen, the defense coordinator, and you have Trent Dilfer at the head coaching position, I think anything is possible.
Yeah, Alex, before I even talk about UAB, we're not going to talk about NC A&T's quarterback name, Eli Brickhandler, and the absolute dud stat line he put up, 2 of 8, 16 yards, and 12 carries for 36 yards. I mean, last name Brickhandler, I think that was pretty accurate. But looking at the quarterback position for UAB, wow, Jacob Zeno comes in, 38 of 41, only missing three passes on 41 attempts. That is absolutely crazy. But almost 300 passing yards, 291 and three touchdowns through the air, as well as five carries for 31 yards. A very versatile player. I really understood the assignment and looks extremely comfortable in the pocket. UAB relied heavily on Jermaine Brown Jr. with his six carries for 47 yards and two touchdowns on the ground, as well as his four receptions for 33 yards. And then running back Isaiah Jacobs in there too as well, 10 carries for 42 yards. That running back room looks very, very poised and ready to go this season. It was a great game for both of them. Then looking at the wide receiver room, a guy in TJ Jones, two receptions, 41 yards in the touchdown. I thought it was very incredible how he played against the defense. He looked like a go-to guy. And then Fred Ferrer, the second, four receptions, 54 yards. He looked very, very good too. Really across the wide receiver room, I really saw a lot of good things. And coming out in this first game, you got to set a tone for the season. I think UAB's offense did that perfectly. And then you look at their defense. I know you're not playing a great opponent, but they really constricted the way NCAA&T was trying to play. You talk about linebacker Jason Bratton with 12 tackles, eight solo tackles, two sacks, and two tackles for losses. He was all over the field. He's going to be the star of that defense right there. I really expect him to be the leader. And if he can lead the team like this every single week, then UAB is going to do very, very good this season, especially with the way their offense is playing.
Yeah, I, like I said, I'm excited for this season for UAB football because last season they had all that up in the air with the head coaching position. So with Trent Dilfer there now, I'm so excited. I really am. All right, let's move on to a fan base that's probably not too excited about their team. Number five, LSU versus number eight, Florida State. Florida State ended up winning that game 45-24. And the 24 points LSU scored, it should have been 17. They kind of got a garbage time touchdown at the end. Let's look at LSU. Brian Kelly had a few words to say about that team. Basically on the lines of they should all be executed, kind of like his famous Notre Dame quote. Not very good performance. Jaden Daniels had an okay game, was a leading rusher. The running game for LSU was basically non-existent outside of Jaden Daniels. Josh Williams, Noah Kane, Trey Bradford, all basically useless. Malik Nabers, who was supposed to be this next great LSU wide receiver, was non-existent throughout the entire game, it felt like. And the defense, who we expected to be really good with Harold Perkins, didn't seem to really have an impact in the second half. I think they played really well in the first half. When they got, as a team as a whole, they got into that second half and they kind of were just running through the motions. It felt like they weren't doing anything. Harold Perkins was a non-factor, five tackles. And I just feel like LSU, I'm still trying to figure out why they're ranked number five. It just feels like they beat Alabama last year. And everybody's like, okay, LSU, this is it. This is a team, top 10 team. And you look at the roster, it's not a top 10 roster in college football. It's just not. I know Jaden Daniels is a good versatile quarterback and guy like Harold Perkins is a good linebacker, but I just never saw it with LSU. I know they really just got all that credit for beating Alabama last year. When you look at Florida State, everybody thought this team was going to be good going into the season, but a lot of people kind of like Texas where they didn't want to believe it till they saw it. And I think FSU showed it to them this game. Because going into it, I think everybody thought this was going to be kind of like last year where it was a one possession game up until the last drive. But Jordan Travis got off to a rough start in that first half, had a few bad throws, but got himself under control, came out of that second half and were throwing lasers, four touchdowns, and then one rushing touchdown. The running game for Florida State wasn't great either. Trey Benson really didn't get all his 47 yards until late in that fourth quarter. But the wide receiver room for Florida State was dominant. Keon Coleman, 122 yards and three touchdowns. All three touchdowns were awesome to watch. There was a couple of times where he just mothed people up and down the field. Johnny Wilson, the 6'6 wide receiver, had 104 yards. And then Jaheim Bell, 41 yards, one touchdown receiving, and then had a rushing touchdown. So that FSU offense really lived up to that hype. And then the defense really handled itself there well against LSU's dynamic quarterback. They had four sacks, five TFLs, an interception, and then a fumble recovery. With fumble recovery was on a punt, a muff punt by Aaron Anderson. But I think FSU is, like I said, when we previewed this college football season, is going to be in the college football playoff if they continue to play like this, because they have tons of talent on both sides of the ball, and this game really proved it.
For me, this game has to go on Brian Kelly and the way he performed as a head coach for LSU. there are two different times where LSU was in Florida State's territory and they forced with a fourth down scenario. And instead of realizing how big of a game this was and taking the points, which was a smart decision, he decided to go for it both times and they didn't get it either time. So those are six key points left on the board. But besides that, that's a ton of momentum that's just left there too. The fact that you don't put any points up in those scenarios, it's really detrimental to your team's morale throughout the game. And early on in this game, LSU looked really, really good, and they looked like they were going to run away with it, honestly. The way their offense was performing, the way that they were able to move at will against FSU's defense, it felt like FSU's secondary was kind of suspect. But over time, it seemed like LSU just kind of got out of their comfort zone, tried to do things that were a little too big for them. Jaden Daniels was probably asked a little too much of himself to try to put the team in different scenarios down the stretch of this game. And it really backfired. So I did not like the way Brian Kelly controlled this game from a coaching standpoint. But you look at the LSU defense. Their defensive front was very, very good. Their secondary, they need some help, man. They need.
But it's DBU.
Yeah, DBU. Yeah, no, it is not. Especially after this game. After I saw a bunch of 50-50 balls, they looked like 90-10 balls for Keon Coleman.
Everybody was 100-0.
Yeah, pretty much. There was no chance because Keon Coleman, every single time, it didn't matter. He was catching it. I don't understand how. And I was just amazed by the way he performed. But what a gift for Florida State, getting him from Michigan State out of the portal. I mean, that was huge. And then Johnny Wilson pretty much did the same thing. He was a go-to guy for Jordan Travis in the Florida State offense. Jordan Travis looked fantastic. He made a lot of good plays. I saw only a very few times that he made the wrong decision for the most part. He played very, very smart football and put his team in his situation to win the game. And after they went down and the defense got a stop, they didn't let off the gas pedal. They went down and they scored again and again and again. And Jordan Travis, being the commander of the FSU offense, just incredible. 23 of 31, 342 passing yards, 4 passing touchdowns. I know he did have an interception, and that's something that needs to be corrected. It was not a very good one either. But he also had 7 carries for 38 yards and a rushing touchdown on that read option where he basically just improvised it himself. So he played a tremendous game. There are a few things that MSU needs to correct on the offensive end, a little bit more on the defensive end, especially in the secondary there. But they played a very, very, very good game against a very talented LSU team. And we're going to probably look back on this game here in the next month or two and say, wow, this win looks really, really good, or this win looks really, really bad, based on the trajectory of LSU or the trajectory of FSU, how these two teams compete throughout the season. But if you're an LSU fan, this is definitely not how you wanted to start the season. It makes the path, if you want to make the college football playoff, it makes the path to it extremely difficult, especially when you have a big game like this on your resume and you decide to lose it by this much. And basically, yeah, it smacked around. I mean, this game was pretty close to, being 45-17.
Yeah, and it should have been.
It's pretty much a blowout. But for FSU, you look at where they are in the ACC, what competition they have coming up. You got Clemson in there. You got North Carolina. Duke is another team that you might have to worry about. But other than that, it's pretty much home free. You take care of your big, important games in that conference, you're looking at just basically walking to the College Football Playoff. And I think with Jordan Travis at the helm, with Mike Norvell and what he's been able to do for this team, with that receiving room, they got a very, very easy path. I would not be surprised to see him there coming up in the postseason.
Yeah, I was looking at LSU Twitter and listening to some radio shows today, and it feels like LSU fans are basically throwing the towel already. They lose one game and they're like, you know what, season's over, we're throwing the towel. And you can't have that type of mentality regardless if you're a fan or a player, because it's only your first game. I know it was a loss, I know you got blown out, but it was against Florida State. It's not like you lost to Texas State. So there's a lot to build off of for LSU. The running game has to get better. They can't run Jaden Daniels to do everything. The defense has to be better. But I think LSU, there's a road for them to make the college football playoff. It's much more difficult now, like you mentioned, Nathan. But there's no reason to throw in the towel now. Just go back to the drawing board. get your crap together and you'll be fine.
Yeah, they have the talent. They just got to fix a few things. Which, yeah. By a few, I mean a lot, but...
All right, let's move on to some upsets here that happened this weekend. First being Colorado taking down number 17, TCU, 45-42. Shedeur Sanders, 510 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. You had running back, who's a freshman, Dylan Edwards, 6 carries, 24 yards, and a touchdown. And then 5 receptions, 135 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Insane.
And then wide receiver cornerback Travis Hunter played a total of 144 snaps, had 11 receptions, 119 yards, and then an interception as a DB. A lot of build up for Colorado's offense. The defense, not so much. 0 sacks, 0 TFLs, so got to work on that there. TCU coming off that national championship appearance, it was hard to watch. Chandler Morris is about as good as a quarterback is as his dad is a coach, so not very good. Basically cost TCU this game, even though the defense wasn't great, but Chandler Morris, 2 red zone interceptions, which were terrible throws. The one where he tried to throw on the wheel route, which Hunter intercepted, I'm not sure what he was looking at. I'm not sure if he needed some reading glasses or something, but it was pretty bad. He's got to get better. The running back duo of Bailey and Sanders was very good, very explosive, and the replacement of somebody like Kendre Miller and Amari DiMercato. So they got some good guys there. This team lost a lot. Max Duggan's not there. Quentin Johnson's not there. Like I mentioned, Kendre Miller's not there. That defense lost a lot. No more Travis Hodges Tomlinson. I personally didn't see this as a upset. I don't know why the spread was so big for it.
Yeah, 20 points is crazy.
TCU lost so much. I personally didn't think TCU was going to go into this game and beat Colorado or blow them out by that much. I don't think TCU is going to be anything special this year. Chandler Morris is not the answer at quarterback. They got to find something else there. But Colorado, like I said multiple times this video, for local teams, lots to build off of. Got a matchup next week with Nebraska. So maybe they pull off a quote-unquote upset. I don't think it's going to be an upset against Nebraska because they'll probably be favorited against them. But Deion Sanders has his program in the right direction, and Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are poised to be first-round draft picks.
You know, we were very critical of the way Deion Sanders made moves this offseason for Colorado, being hired into the program, the way he basically stripped it clean and replaced all the personnel. I know he was probably a little rude about it. And
could have done better.
I think with the moral side of things, he could have done better there. But the way he just plugged in personnel and basically said, let's go and get to work in this offseason. And they did that. And they come out in this game 20-point underdogs, which I thought was crazy, given the fact that Colorado has a ton of talent that just followed Deion Sanders. And they come out in this game. Their defense doesn't look good at all. But Shedeur Sanders looks like a Heisman quarterback. Dylan Edwards at running back, I don't understand. He looked like Christian McCaffrey out there. And then not to mention Travis Hunter being able to play 144 snaps in the Texas heat. And he didn't even look tired of the game. He was ready to play more. So the absolute environment that Colorado has set up, or the culture that Deion Sanders has in place there, is working very, very well. I know the defense doesn't play great. I know there's a lot of things that need to improve on there. I'm not saying that they're going to go and run the table the rest of the way and go undefeated, because they got a really, really tough schedule ahead. But compared to where Colorado was last year, to what Deion Sanders has done in the offseason, to where they are now, they are in a 10 times better scenario. And I would not be surprised if they are a spoiled team. If they go and knock off a team like USC or Oregon, or just absolutely ruin some of these Pac-12 teams' destiny, because that's just who they are. Looking at TCU, like you said, I would say lost a ton, and there's a ton on both sides of the ball. Having to replace Max Duggan, it was not going to be an easy feat, and honestly, it was not. Chandler Morris comes in. He does not look great. He threw 2 stupid interceptions that really changed the flow of the game, and 2 huge interceptions that really cost him the game, in my opinion. He needed to play better by himself, but it's not just a one-person show. There are a lot of things that could have been better. The TCU defense gave up way too many big plays. It felt like they struggled to get off the field on third down scenarios, and scenarios that really they should have been able to get off the field, which was crazy to me. And then the wide receiver position could have been a little bit better too. TCU there's a lot to improve on. There's a lot that needs to be pointed out and saying, hey, we need to do better at this. I think a few personnel changes would not hurt. But I do also think you need to give Colorado a ton of credit and Deion Sanders a ton of credit for the way that they prepared this offseason and the way they came in and performed in this game.
Yeah, they look really good. Moving on to some other upsets here. Yeah, Texas State beat Baylor 42-31. Former Auburn quarterback TJ Finley led Texas State to that victory. A bit baffling there. Then Wyoming beats Texas Tech in double overtime, 35-33. Nathan had Texas Tech in his Big 12 championship.
Not sure it ain't over until it's over. Kansas State lost to Tulane early on last year, and they won the Big 12 championship, so it ain't over yet.
Then you had Minnesota beat Nebraska 13-10 in Matt Rhule's debut. Nebraska quarterback Jeff Sims had three interceptions, one of which allowed Minnesota to drive down the field and hit that game-winning field goal. You had Fresno State beat Purdue 39-35. I believe Nathan had a Purdue in his Big Ten championship, so he's looking.
It ain't over.
He's looking good right now with that one. Then you had Northern Illinois beat Boston College 27-24 in overtime. So there are your big upsets for this weekend. From this weekend, some other storylines that came up: Florida ended up losing to Utah with a backup quarterback, 24-11. Question marks around if Billy Napier is going to be done, if he's on the hot seat now. Nathan, do you think he is going to be out the door regardless of what happens the rest of the season?
I don't think it's set in stone yet, but if he loses a few more games, especially the one to Vanderbilt, if he loses to Vanderbilt, I think that's going to be the final straw there.
Yeah, he's definitely firmly on the hot seat. I think kind of like Dave Aranda is for Baylor now because of these two losses, especially with Utah having a backup quarterback. That should have been a gimme for Florida. Some other news here. You had Penn State quarterback Drew Allar. A lot of hype going into the season. Expected him to be the next great Penn State quarterback. Lived up to that hype, in my opinion, against West Virginia. 21-29, 325 yards, three touchdowns, zero interceptions. Like I told you, Nathan, he looked very Bryce Young-esque in the pocket, the way he moved up and moved around in it, kept his eyes downfield, the way he delivered these passes. So I think Penn State has a good quarterback there, much better than somebody like Sean Clifford, who kept that program held it back, in my opinion. Moving on, you had Ohio State offensive struggle against Indiana in the season opener. It was rough to watch, isn't it? If you're an Ohio State fan, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Ebukam combined for five receptions and 34 yards. Kyle McCord did not look good. I wouldn't be surprised if next week we see Devin Brown get the start.
No, and it's just going to take time. He needs time to adjust the offense. It's not going to be – Rome wasn't built in the day. I think Kyle McCord is going to be a good quarterback. He's just got to give him time.
Yeah. Disappointing Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't have that great of a game considering the hype going into the season. Hopefully they can get him back on track because he's got to be the focal point of that offense. All right, then you had the Oregon Ducks mascot doing 546 push-ups after Oregon scores 81 points against Portland State. That duck was gassed after the game. If you saw the images and clips on Twitter and or X and Instagram and all that, he was gassed. I feel for the dude. I cannot imagine having to do 546 push-ups. I guess he's a conditioned type of fella. He's kind of like
not to mention it was in his mascot suit too, so yeah. He had to be extremely hot in there.
He got that Travis Hunter conditioning. So good for the Oregon Ducks mascot. You had Wisconsin's running game dominate Buffalo with Ches Malusi, 13 carries, 157 yards, two touchdowns, and Braylon Allen, 17 carries, 141 yards, and two touchdowns. That was better than Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State's running back duos that we had kind of all pegged as the top in the country outside of Wisconsin. We kind of had Wisconsin as that fourth or fifth. So that was good to see Wisconsin kind of rely on the running game much more than they did Tanner Mordecai, who had under 200 passing yards. A little bit of a different scheme and play calling from Wisconsin offensive coordinator Phil Longo than what he did at North Carolina. Nathan, what do you think about the Wisconsin running game? Do you think it's going to be consistent and kind of be up there with Michigan and Penn State?
It's all going to come down to the defense they play. I already watched Ohio State's defense. That defense is off the charts, really good. Penn State's defense is really, really good. I know that one's built more to stop the pass, but they still have a bunch of great playmakers on the defensive line. And then Michigan has many great playmakers on the defense that can stop the run. So I think that it's going to be consistent for the most part. But when they come and step into some of these bigger matchups in the Big Ten, it's going to be very, very hard for them to run the ball. And they got to figure some stuff out.
Yeah, they got to get Tanner Mordecai under control. He did not look comfortable or good against Buffalo, which is a little bit alarming, but it was his first game with Wisconsin and with Phil Longo. So maybe they get in under control. And he had a, moving on, he had Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr. Throw for four passing touchdowns in the second quarter against Boise State. Finished the game with 450 passing yards and five touchdowns in a win for Washington. And, you know, Oklahoma ended up scoring more touchdowns than Arkansas State had first downs. And the final score was 73-0. If you saw the clips on X and Twitter or Twitter, you saw the Arkansas State player consoling head coach Butch Jones with how bad that team got beat down. It was hard to watch.
That was pitiful.
I guess it's good for Oklahoma because last year was not great, but to come out in here and put 73 points up on Arkansas State, regardless of how good Arkansas State is, it's a good motivator. And then the last thing, North Carolina beat up on South Carolina 31-17. Drake May does struggle and throws two interceptions, but the big story is South Carolina's offensive line. Lord have mercy. I did not think South Carolina would have the worst offensive line in this matchup, but they did. The team had 31 carries for negative two yards. And they gave up 9 sacks to the Tar Heels. And just for some comparisons here, the Tar Heels had 17 sacks in all of 2022, and they had 9 this game. So UNC had South Carolina on the ropes the entire game. Spencer Rattler did all he could, but it was not Beamer ball. It was not what they wanted. South Carolina had all this hype going into the season and just fell flat on their face. Nathan, what do you make of South Carolina this game?
Well, I identify on their schedule, week 3, they go to Georgia to play them. If they do not have a lick of knowing what's going to go on, how to block, I feel bad for Spencer Rattler. He might end up in the hospital because 9 sacks in the game is incredible. I don't even know how you give that out to this UNC defense that is very, very mediocre at best.
Yeah, it was alarming. They really need to get it under control because when they played, like you said, Nathan, when they played Georgia, who has a much better defensive front, Spencer Rattler's they're going to have to take him out of the stadium in an ambulance because, the offensive line is looking at the grades. I think the highest one was graded like a 65.
That's awful.
I mean, that was awful. South Carolina's got to be better, especially in the SEC. All right, that'll wrap up our recap of this past week of college football. We'll be back next week recapping that week with games like Alabama and Texas. So excited to see what happens this weekend and recap that. Appreciate everyone for listening. See you next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.